So this morning, as I just mentioned, we are doing the last of our marks of a disciple, what we're calling dying to self, which sure seems like, as you'll see, that is one of the things that a disciple of Jesus continues to strive towards and work towards. And as I mentioned in my prayer, this is probably the most challenging of the marks of a disciple, because it forces you to choose between, you know, who you're going to live for, right? Yourself or live for Jesus. And so it is challenging, but I'm really hoping this morning that it'll be a good challenging and you'll leave today kind of encouraged and excited to kind of maybe even take another step in your walk with the Lord. So I'm going to do kind of what I did last week, which is we're going to take one main passage, kind of break it down and add interslice some other scripture passages. And so the passage that will be kind of our primary passage is here in Luke chapter 9. So let me just read it and then we'll break down. I've got seven points that I want to hit. So this is Jesus, and it says, "And he said to all, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. For what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and yet loses or forfeits himself?" And you can see already what I was talking about. I mean, this is going to be, it's a real challenge, but I hope it's a good challenge for you guys. So, as I mentioned, I have seven quick things I want to mention as it relates to this passage. So we're just going to kind of take the whole passage and kind of go point by point. So obviously the first one is that he said this to all, right? It wasn't just a selective thing that he said just to some. He says it to all then, as he does now, that if you want to be a disciple of Jesus, right, you need to learn how to deny yourself and take up your cross daily. And so it's something for all of us. And so the second one is, and he said to all, if anyone would come after me. And it was interesting because as I thought about this, you know, at least in the English, we have this term. In the English language, we have this term where you say, you kind of be polite and you're saying, oh, after you, right? And you let someone else go through a door or whatever. And that's not quite, even though it's similar wording, it's not quite what we're talking about here. This phrase, if anyone would come after me, it really means if anyone would pursue me, if anyone would come after, you know, someone else, right? So as disciples of Jesus, we desire to come after or to pursue Jesus, to be a devoted follower of Jesus, obviously as someone who's going to be pursuing Jesus. And there was an interesting verse to ponder because I was thinking about, you know, other verses that deal with, you know, pursuing Jesus. And I remembered this one in Luke chapter 11 where Jesus says, "And I tell you, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you'll find. Knock and it'll be open to you. For everyone who asks receives, and the one who seeks finds, and the one who knocks, it will be open." And you can tell, I mean, these three words of ask, seek, and knock in this passage are all, right, the thing that those three words have in common is that that they're all sort of pursuit type words, right? Jesus wants us to pursue him actively and relentlessly, right? And I love this passage because it's kind of this, you know, I mean, when you ask, when you seek, right, it's kind of a continual, what do I want to say? It's a continual process, right? You continue to ask and it'll be given to you. Seek, and right, if you're not asking and seeking and knocking, you're kind of just whatever, sitting on a couch somewhere, or you're laying back. You're not going forward and pursuing. And this indicates an action on our part, right? A continual pursuit. And so as it relates to come after Jesus, there's a common theme too, by the way, right? In these six marks of a disciple, I think one of the common themes is that, you know, it's all about Jesus, right? Jesus asks for us to make him number one in our lives, to pursue him in our quiet times and in the time in the Word, you know, make him supreme, have a love for him that is supreme. And so you can see that there's kind of this thing over and over again about pursuing Jesus. So we have, and he said to all, anyone would come after me. Now this is the, actually these next two are the ones that are probably the most challenging. So this is the time when, you know, we just have to buckle up and get at it. So let him deny himself. So as we're pursuing Jesus, he's asking us, number one, to deny ourselves. And so as we follow Jesus, right, and we're coming after him and we're pursuing him, we start to look more and more like him. And as we look more like him, we look less like the world, right? You probably have heard this Campus Crusade, now called CRU, has this the four spiritual laws, right, that they use for their evangelism tool. And so they have this whole thing of getting out of the chair of control of your life and allowing Jesus to actually take that, you know, to take that seat in the chair. And so to deny ourselves is to say no to ourselves and yes to God. And I was thinking about a way to talk about that, about denying ourselves. And I don't know why I always think about food, but I often think about food, right? And so you think about going to a buffet and you think, man, I got all this food I can eat. I can eat anything I want. But if you're like me, I'm now in my second half of my 40s. And at some point in my early 30s, my metabolism went south one winter and then never found its way home, right? So I have to deny myself. I cannot eat what I used to eat when I was in my 20s, right? So that's one way to think about it. You have to just say, no, I'd love to eat this, but, you know, I can't do it. And so, and as it relates to denying ourselves, saying no to ourselves and saying yes to God and really allowing him to be the one to guide and direct us daily, I think, personally, my experience has been that we're really kind of our own worst enemy in that. And so from time to time, you know, as I have these extended times with the Lord, I have this prayer that I always, that I like. In fact, I keep it in I have my own little prayer journal of my own, and so I keep it with me. And so I've got it here for you guys, but I think it's a good prayer for us as we think about, you know, denying ourselves and us just being our own worst enemy. So it goes, God, harden me against myself, the coward with pathetic voice, who craves for ease and rest and joy. Myself, arch traitor to myself, my hollowest friend, my deadliest foe, my clog, whatever road I go. And I love that because I think, you know, in my own flesh, quite frankly, you know, I mean, it's hard to think about denying myself to pursuing God daily. And so to just be able to pray, God, just, you know, kind of save me from myself. I need that a lot. So Jesus says that the disciple of Jesus will deny himself, take up his cross. And this is one that's hard because, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I don't have a cross, at least not a physical one. Of course, we have one here. I guess we could take turns, you know, taking that up and whatever, but I don't have one in my backyard, right? So this whole idea of denying myself and taking up my cross, it was something that was interesting. As it relates to those who heard Jesus say this personally, of course, the disciples and all those who heard these words knew what taking up the cross meant, right? I mean, they had seen plenty of crucifixions in their lifetime under Roman rule, or at least they had heard about how a condemned man would have had to carry his own cross to the place of his death, having to carry the very instrument of his execution. And that's why they knew what Jesus meant by taking up his cross. The cross Jesus speaks about isn't his cross, right? Obviously, because we can't pay for our own sins. So it's not his cross. The cross that Jesus is talking about here is the cross that each one of us would have to carry on our own shoulders. And you can remember the story in the Gospels about Jesus dying on the cross. And he literally had to, as he was being paraded through the streets, he had to carry his own cross. And then remember, he got so weak that he couldn't do it anymore. And so they had another guy come and pull the guy out of the crowd. And then the other guy carried the cross for Jesus. But for us, when we take up our own cross, it just means that we die to ourselves, right? It goes back to the last point. We deny ourselves. We must put God's will ahead of our own, just as Jesus did and prayed. And so the verse to remember here, as we work on denying ourselves and taking up our cross, is the same thing that Jesus prayed, right? And just before he was crucified, he said, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." And so as we struggle with denying ourselves, allowing Jesus to take that seat of control in our lives, I think this is a good verse to memorize, even to say, "Lord, I don't really want to forgive that guy, right? I want to actually," and then say, "But Lord, not my will, but yours be done." Or, you know, to serve someone in a special way and you don't want to have to do it. Or, you know, again, we get in our way, you know, way too often, I think. And so to be able to say, "Nevertheless, not my will, God, but yours be done." It's this willingness to endure shame and embarrassment and reproach and rejection and persecution and even martyrdom for his sake. So to take up one's cross is simply, if we sort of summarize it, it's simply to be willing to pay any price for Christ's sake. So we're denying ourselves and taking up our cross. And then I just thought it was interesting. He actually gives us a frequency as to how often we're supposed to do this, right? It's actually daily. Something that we are asked to do by Jesus to do daily, to take up our cross, to put God's will for our lives ahead of our own daily and every day. And so maybe for you that might mean, boy, before your feet hit the ground, you're praying some prayer, "Lord, just help me to serve you, to walk with you. May your will be done ahead of my own. Thank you, Jesus." And then you hit the ground running, right? Something like that. So it's something he's asking us to do daily. And then, of course, he says, "Follow me," right? To follow me, to follow Jesus. And since, you know, I won't be here next week for the wrap-up, let me just give you kind of a mini wrap-up of these marks of a disciple. Because as I mentioned, I do think that there's a lot of common ground here. You remember in the first of the marks of disciple, we talked about being identified with Christ, right? The importance of knowing Jesus intimately. And then the next week, we talked about a supreme love for Christ, right? Remember Matthew 22, to love the Lord with all your heart and all your mind and all your strength. I gave you a checklist of, you know, to be able to see where your love sort of quotient for Jesus was. Right? You remember that it was, you know, "I admire Jesus more than I admire anything else. And I want to his approval more than I want the approval of anyone else." And then we talked about being fruitful for Christ. You remember the John 15:5, right? Jesus says, "I am the vine, you are the branches. You can only bear fruit if you remain close to the vine." And we talked about how these six marks of a disciple are really a marker for how you're doing with Jesus. And then we talked just last week about being filled with love for others. And this love for others comes as we stay close to the Lord. And of course, we can see a trend here, right? And so to be a disciple of Jesus Jesus requires this very first spot in your life, right? You must make him number one. There's a great verse that talks about this in Luke 14, where Jesus says, "Whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." So you can see why we call this one of the marks of a disciple, right? Jesus says it himself. "For which of you, desiring to build a tower, does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he laid down a foundation, he's not able to finish. All who see it begin to mock him, saying, 'This man began to build and was not able to finish.'" And what a convicting passage on one hand, but really a fantastic marker for being a disciple of Jesus, right? That we do have to count the cost of saying daily, "Lord, not my will, but may your will be done." Because it's hard, right? It's very hard. The final of the points is, just got a text. Sorry about that. So the last of the marks is, he says, "For what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses and forfeits himself?" And there's all kinds of stories I could mention. Of course, you guys know some of these, right? They always talk about lottery winners who end up, you know, just having horrible lives, actually. It actually turns out to be worse for them. You know, I think about the certainly my life before Jesus, and I think, gosh, if that would have continued, oh my gosh, I may have been wealthier, and I may have been, you know, my life may have been better materially, but gosh, I would have lost so much. And I think about these family members that I know. You know, we're just going through a stage where my grandmother is now kind of in a long-term care kind of place. We just had to move her out of her apartment, and we had a garage sale at our house for her. And my dad has early onset Alzheimer's, and you know, he's going to be going to a place here soon, and he's only 70. Well, he's 70, so he'll be 71 in June. And boy, these dear family members who pursued the world, but I think they've definitely lost more than what they've gained. And you remember, you guys have all heard this, but there's this phrase about, you know, you won't be able to have a U-Haul follow your hearse, you know, on the day of your funeral. I mean, you can't take any of it with you, right? So, and this reminds me of kind of my final story before I'm done. Of course, as you guys may know, if you've seen my book, I'm a big fan of these missionary stories and these missionary heroes. And there's one that I like in particular. Some of you may have heard of this guy, C.T. Studd, which just alone you go, that's kind of a cool name, right? What a stud, Mr. Studd, you know. But so he was born in England in 1860. The one of three sons of a wealthy trader. He had made a fortune. His father had made a fortune in India. C.T., by the time he was 16, became an expert cricket player, became the captain of his team. And it wasn't until he was 18 when he came to know the Lord. And it was one of these things where, and as an 18-year-old, he came to know the Lord, but didn't really, you know, was kind of a cool cricket player, family of a, you know, son of a rich, in a rich family. And he didn't grow in his walk for a number of years. And then 6 years later, in his early to mid 20s, right, the Lord in his goodness worked in his life after a serious illness with his brother, and going to hear D.L. Moody, which I think to actually have heard D.L. Moody would have been incredibly fun. But, you know, so he met the Lord, restored to him the joy of his salvation, and the Lord continued to work in his life, and he led C.T. kind of out of his life of wealth and influence to go to China, which of course is another reason why he's close to my heart, right? So in 1885, sailed for China. After serving the Lord in China, he had some connections in India. actually, that's where his father had done a lot of business. And so did missionary work in India. He met his wife while in China. They began to have kids. And later then he returned home to England. After their return home in 1906, CT was stirred by the need of for missionary pioneer work in Central Africa. In 1910, CT sailed for Africa alone without his wife and kids. At that time, it was considered just too dangerous for women and children to go. So he sailed alone without his wife and kids. And over the next 21 years, the Lord faithfully used CT Studd in Africa. He saw much fruit. Many mission stations opened. Of course, this was the time when this was pioneer work, right? There was no other work that were already happening, that was already happening. And many Africans came to know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. And towards the very end of his life, CT wrote a letter home. And he gave kind of the last backward look at the outstanding events of his life. And I love this. He says, "As I believe I am now nearing my departure from this world, I have but a few things to rejoice in. And they are these. That God called me to China, and I went in spite of the utmost opposition from my loved ones." Oh, this was actually the questions. Sorry about that. I thought I had these on here. And then number two, he said, that I deliberately, at the call of God, went alone on the Bibby Liner. The Bibby Liner was the boat, the ship that he took to Africa. Went alone on the Bibby Liner in 1910, gave up my life for this work, which was not to be henceforth not only for the Sudan, but for the whole unevangelized world. And so, guys, I use his story as an example, not to say that we're all going to become missionaries, because I don't think God calls us all to be missionaries, but that we would surrender our lives to Jesus to the point where we would know that as Jesus calls us to do something, right, we obey it, that we do it. I mean, CT was a guy who, you know, denied himself and took up his cross daily and followed Jesus. And, you know, my final challenge of the final mark of a disciple is, you know, may we all, guys, make a commitment to each other, even this morning, that as we all pursue Jesus, as we deny ourselves, as we take up our cross daily. And, you know, this is one of the beautiful things about this kind of a Bible study, right? You've got the guys around your tables, that we hold each other accountable to that commitment, knowing that we each are the coward with pathetic voice who craves for ease and rest and joy, and that we were an arch traitor for ourselves. And I do say, just on a personal note, I think we all need each other in this pursuit to take up our cross daily. I mean, Anthony just mentioned 2 days ago that, you know, there's no such thing as a Lone Ranger Christian, right? I think we need each other. And it goes back to week one where we said, hey, we're going to learn how to kind of do this together in a community as men. So I will go ahead and put up the discussion questions. I hope that it's a great discussion. I've been praying for a great discussion with you guys.